Hello, dear listener, and welcome to a Burkamp Wonderland, a World Cup special, part two. It's not coming home. Don't start me. With me this lovely, warm summer's evening where it's only 28 degrees in my house. Lovely. We have, going from left to right, it's only Josh, Mystic Josh. All right, Josh?
Yeah, it's bloody coming home, Danny.
Not coming home, Josh. You've let yourself down there, meow fruit. Sorry. Next to that, it's only Mr. Goonaholic. All right, Dave?
We've got resplendent with my three lions. Look, I'm wearing my heart on my sleeve tonight.
We'll have to believe you because that's a little bit. I think you're still in standard definition. We'll have to sort you out.
Yeah, the problem is it's a white badge on a white shirt.
Oh, that's never going to work.
Touch of class.
And finally, making our see no evil, hear no evil, talk no evil of our three wise monkeys when it comes to being an England fans. It's only bloody Carl, isn't it? You're right, Carl.
It's only me. Well, it definitely is coming home because I spoke to Chris Carpenter and he is confident that England are going to win the World Cup. So 100% is coming home.
I think there's more chance of Malta winning the World Cup with playing Chris up front as a mermaid because that's the only way they're going to win it. Anyway, people, thanks for joining us tonight. The way we have to do it. I'm not going to do it the way Jason does it. I'm just going to say hello to everybody. If you want me to say hello to you, fucking Ellis is in the bloody chat box. Fuck Ellis. You have to put hashtag fuck Ellis in the chat box and then I'll say hello to you at any time during the show, but only do it once. Danny Welbeck's England. Oh, here we go. First person to do it is Carl. I think Carl might well have been doing that even before I said to do it because he's the one who invented it. We're just going to talk about the World Cup, what's happened so far. Talk about the last a few of the teams that qualified from the group stage. We're only going to be here for an hour, but it's just a few mates having a bit of a chit chat about Ellis with fuck piss flaps. He started his own hashtag there. That's not nice. Right, so if we go and have we start with you, Josh. What's your initial thoughts on the World Cup and who got through to the group stage before we move on to the last 16 results? Because we missed out all the group stages because nobody was available.
Well, I absolutely loved it and I'm loving the World Cup. It's one of those things, international football and especially this kind of competition, it's just something that it's my first memories of football kind of start with the World Cup in 98. Sorry for people that will find that, horrifying. The first World Cup I remember was the 98 one. But yeah, I think the teams that have come through, we've seen some really good football from countries that perhaps, don't have standout players that we'll see week in, week out. Teams like Peru and Morocco, who, they're a bit of a hoi polloi of various different nations that have all combined to meet a certain style of play that they want to put out. And yeah, I've really, really enjoyed it. And especially the few giant killings that have occurred as well during this competition, like Germany getting a last grasp win against Sweden before ducking out of the tournament. There's been some absolutely wonderful moments and great goals as well.
So what would you say was the biggest shock from the group stage, the one single game or event?
Oh, biggest shock. Qualifying. Ronaldo scoring a free kick after his 46th attempt. it was a fabulous game. I absolutely loved that. I would say how Russia have come out for the tournament, just as a whole, the way that they've dominated that group and fundamentally just, no one gave them a hope in the world. And to come out, all guns blazing, so to speak, and sticking five past Saudi Arabia. And I think just quietly going about the business of getting through and, they're still here, still going strong.
Okay. Next in my, some good points there, that Ronaldo free kick. It's if you build it, they will come. And he just kept building it and building it. And eventually it did come. Right, next on my little box of left to right. My left to right on here goes Josh, David, Carl. But on the internet, it's going Carl, David, Josh. That's a crazy kind of witchcraft. So, David, same question to you. What was the what did you think of the group stages? And what was the biggest shock for you of the group stages?
I think it would probably be Russia getting through would be the biggest shock, because quite simply beforehand everybody was telling us what a poor side they were, and in fact they proved to be anything but. And given that they've got Croatia, who I think are eminently beatable in the next round, I think they're the side that we've now got to worry about most in our half of the draw. I don't think by any means are we certain of beating Sweden, but I do worry about playing Russia in the semi-final should we get there. Because much like our game in the last 16, there'll be a massive crowd advantage, disadvantage to us, if you like. But the best thing, I think, for me is going back to that, the start of the round of 16 when France beat Argentina and it ended up 4-3. And it kind of set the tone for the first day or two of the knockout phase. And I thought that was an absolutely tremendous game. And Kylian Mbappe, well, we knew how good he was because we tried to sign him. But, really impressive. Good couple of goals. First teenager to score a couple of goals in a World Cup since Pelé in the, was it 1958 final against Sweden? Good stuff.
Did you see the fake news going around? There was a tweet that says someone had interviewed Wenger about the Mbappe signing. And he said, I picked Takuma Asano over him and I still believe Takuma Asano would be the better player.
There's a fella who's been doing lots and lots of fake Arsenal, fake Arsenal news, isn't there?
There is a couple. It's a daily thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's got his own hashtag. Carl, same question to you. What did you think of the group stages and what was your biggest shock?
I think the group stages were absolutely brilliant. You know, there were so many permutations, you know, Senegal going out on because they had the most yellow cards out of Japan. You know, you couldn't write that even if you tried. You know, I'm sure when FIFA wrote that rule, they probably wrote it with a view that it will never happen or it will never be used. But clearly it was. It was brilliant. Germany not going through when, I think when we done the pre-World Cup show and we were talking about who would go through from the groups, I think every single one of us claimed, it was me, John and Simon, can't remember who else was on, but we all said that, you know, there was, it was a guarantee that Germany would go through and look what happened. Cheekily, I was at work when the Germany South Korea game was on, and I went on my betting app, and it was 16-2 for South Korea to beat Germany. And I said to one of my colleagues, "I'm going to put a little cheeky £2 on South Korea just in case," because I thought £2, why not? And he was so adamant. He goes to me, "If South Korea beat Germany, he'd pay me out." Well, I am now £32 richer, thanks to him. Thank you very much, Paul. But, you know, and it's just because this World Cup is just absolutely brilliant, I think, at the moment. Some people may say, oh, because the big teams are out, it's not as good. I love it. You know, it just shows how much the so-called smaller teams have improved. You know, the difference between like a strong nation and a small nation is the gap is closing, and that's really good. It's still a bit of a shame that no African teams sort of have gotten further, but you know, you saw Senegal, you saw how they played. It was absolutely brilliant. I mean, the European teams and the South American teams will always be better because, you know, by and large, they do have better players. It is what it is. But no, at the World Cup so far, I think it's absolutely brilliant. And just like Josh, my sort of first World Cup was World Cup 98, and that's the World Cup I'll always remember because that's a World Cup I watched religiously. I think this has been the best World Cup since 98.
Yeah, it's definitely been lots of goals. I think the last group games of the stages were, some of those were a little bit boring because they'd already been decided. But I think my moment for the bit that made me scream the most was Iran's third game where they almost scored that goal, which almost knocked out, I can't remember what group they're in now. They're in a group with someone in the
Portugal went to Spain, weren't they?
Yeah, they Portugal out.
Yeah, and you're saying about the African teams, you know, poor old Senegal, they had exactly the same games won, goals for and against as Japan, but then they lost out on the fair points thing because Japan had 4 points and Senegal had notched up 6. So that is, but yeah, some of the African teams were very, very close to getting through to the next round. Right, so we move on to the next round. Josh, so we had Uruguay 2, Portugal 1. How much of a shocking result was that? And take France Argentina as well, because David already mentioned that. Yeah, so those two games, what was your thoughts on those?
I thought Uruguay have been very, very dark horse in this competition.
Certainly a midfielder.
Yeah, they hadn't conceded a goal, you know, in God knows how it was. Well, they didn't concede one in the group stages anyway, so we knew there was going to be some kind of resilience from them in that respect, and be very difficult to get past them. But just Yeah, I think that game just overall, Cavani showing what a deadly finisher he can be, as well as Ronaldo doing his thing as he does. I thought it was just a great game to watch, to be honest. I did have a little eye on Torreira. I think I alluded to yesterday when we were on about how, you know, he was a really good battling midfielder that you'd really want to see do well in an Arsenal shirt. And he's certainly got all the credentials, where he was going down to head the ball away from the penalty box from on the ground, you know, sticking his head in where it hurts, was coming from a move where he was dribbling it out from the box into a crowd of Portuguese attackers. And I just saw that and I've seen Arsenal players do that before. I think he'll fit in well, losing possession on the edge of his own box.
That's what we've needed, though, hasn't it, all season? Absolutely. Take the ball out and then go back and get it again. He's like Kante. Is it Conte or Kante?
Kante, but I wouldn't put that kind of pressure on him. But Kante is not a player that I highly rate as much as some people would. Just purely because he can't pass a ball. But as we're talking about France, and I think that was just that game was absolutely mental, as David alluded to.
Game of the tournament.
I think Mbappe I've never seen a player of 19 have such a nation, basically, on the receiving end of such a, you know, he had them on toast. I think after 20 minutes, France knew that they had this game won. If they wanted to, they'd just give the ball to Mbappe, let him run, and they'd get another goal from it, fundamentally. I think they did get very close near the end with, perhaps taking their foot off the gas a little bit too much, but we'll see when they come up against Uruguay on Friday. It's Friday afternoon, isn't it? 3 o'clock kickoff. I think.
Is it four? Actually,
I think
it's either 3 or 4.
I think it's 3 o'clock.
No, 3.
Wikipedia.
3 o'clock.
I've got my wall chart in front of me. It says 3 o'clock.
There you go.
I think that game is just going to be a really, really, really interesting game of just France. I don't think they've been fully tested at the back yet. And I think if Luis Suarez and Cavani are firing together, because Cavani went off with that injury, don't know if we make it in time, but that could be a really, really interesting tactical game. And I think it's a shame because it could have been a semi-final with the way that they've played coming into this. But that's what the World Cup's about, right? Having these and tournament football in general is you don't always get what you want, and you'll end up with these teams that, you know, by losing one game here or winning one there, you'll put yourself on a better side of the draw. And I think it is rather top heavy, this side, with Brazil and Belgium also in that side. But, you know, Gareth knew when he played out that horrible game against Belgium.
Yeah, that wasn't good. But those goals from Di Maria and that one from Pavard, I mean, that Pavard bloke was playing in the third tier of French football. I mean, Chris knows him personally. They've been messaging since Pavard was a young pro, because Chris has his fingers in all the pies in that league, especially in Ligue 2, where his team is, and my team are in Ligue 1.
Ligue 2.
So Pavard was playing for Stuttgart last season.
You what?
Pavard was playing with Stuttgart last season.
Yeah.
With Takuna Asano.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, they were saying that he started his career, because remember, he was, when I had a look at him, and always at Asano's side, because they got promoted, they won Bundesliga 2, and then they had a struggling season in Bundesliga. But they still did all right. Yeah, but I'm sure they said that he was playing like third or fourth tier football a few years ago. Lille B. There you go. That's who he was with. I don't know if that's a rapper or if that's a team. I've got no idea.
Jesus Christ.
David, you're going to get the Spain-Russia game, which went to penalties, and then Croatia-Denmark, which also went to penalties. What do you think of those two games? Or did you see them both?
Yes, I did. And Spain and Russia, it carried on. It was a fascinating watch, simply because although Spain obviously had the lion's share of the possession, it was a bit like watching many, many Arsenal matches of the last 2 or 3 years. In effect, they had lots of the ball but couldn't do much with it. And playing with just Costa up top and getting no service to him, they looked strangely vulnerable, and Russia made the absolute most of it. They got they conceded the early own goal, which I thought the guy was kind of I don't know why he was trying to hold off. I think it was Costa, wasn't it? And he wasn't even looking at what was going on. And the back heel that put them behind was harsh on them. But it looked like the only way Spain would score. And when Russia got the penalty to get back into it, Mr. Putin was obviously the television official. I thought they were well worth the draw on the and the penalty shootout. Well, who doesn't like a penalty shootout after last night? Hated them a few years ago, but love them now.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
For the goalkeepers, though.
Croatia and Denmark, I don't remember too much about other than the penalty shootout, in all honesty. So someone else might be better off doing that.
I think that's all there really was to talk about, apart from Mandzukic is a mean, evil human being, and that Peter Schmeichel and his son, Kasper Schmeichel, for me, stole the show. Did you see the game, Carl?
No, I didn't.
Did you watch?
It's the only game I didn't see.
I saw the penalty shootout and saw the highlights from it, especially with Peter and Kasper. With the joint celebrations, I did notice the commentator allude to it a couple of times that those two might be related at some point.
I expected Croatia. I saw all the games, and I expected Croatia to go out there and probably do Denmark, because Denmark have only got a few decent players like Eriksen, but Croatia were really good. But Denmark were also really good, and it got a bit bitty at times. It got a bit rough and tumble at times, and when it cut, they. When did he save a penalty? Oh, he did. Yeah. For Modric. Yeah. When Kasper Schmeichel, before that though, I've never seen a player do more big box, little box in the air of his arms in the whole tournament than what Kasper Schmeichel was doing. He was screaming at the bloke. Why don't these people realise the referee is not going to change his mind? I mean, now, admittedly, if you moan, he may go to VAR, but they're going to go to VAR whether you ask them to or not. And they went there and it was brilliant. And that game just shows what a fantastic goalkeeper that Schmeichel is. And I felt, of all the players there, he's the one I felt the most sorry for, because he really kept them in the game at times. So we've done those two. Carl, how about Brazil, Mexico and Belgium, Japan? Any thoughts on those?
Brazil, Mexico, it had all the hallmarks to be a very good game.
It wasn't.
It was kind of a very bitty game, and I think my only one sort of issue with the Brazil game was Neymar in his theatrics. And I think, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, isn't he embarrassed by doing it? The guy's been doing it for the last, 5-6 years. So why is he going to be embarrassed, like, in the World Cup? You know, we watch Premier League football, and not a lot of players do that in the Premier League. We hate it so much, but you do watch Spanish football, and they're up to it all the time. The Barcelona and Real Madrid players doing it all the time. Even in the Uruguay, Uruguay-Portugal match, when Suarez got tapped on the back of his shoulder and he went down holding his head, that was an absolute joke. And it's you know, this is what I thought VAR was for. I thought VAR was there to cut out all the theatrics and all the silliness, you know. Yes, I do, you know what, I fully admit someone did step on Neymar's foot, they did, and this but it didn't, for him to be rolling around as much as he did, we both know it didn't hurt that much. Like, everyone knows that. And I just think doesn't someone watch that with him and think, what are you doing? Like, you're not embarrassed by you rolling around on the floor when you clearly didn't know? You're meant to be a footballer. You're meant to be kind of tough. And you're clearly not, like, genuinely. And you just think to yourself, why do you do things like that? So I think the Brazil-Mexico game, it kind of petered out a little bit. And, you know, I think Mexico went all out, and then obviously Brazil got their second goal and the game was kind of over with. But it's a shame that Mexico had been knocked out. Was it the last 3 or 4 World Cups by Brazil? So that's obviously their sort
of... Seven of the last times they've gone out is all in the last round of 16 as well. They've never made it past. Yeah.
That's crazy. And the Belgium-Japan game, well, absolutely brilliant. I don't care. That, for me, that was probably the second best game of the tournament, because, you know, Japan going 2-0 up, everyone was thought, okay, it's all over, dead and buried. And, you know, Martinez, you know, he brings on Nasha Chadli and everyone's thinking, what the hell? Like, why are you bringing on Nasser Chadli? Like, I'm sure everyone was thinking, no, bring on Batshuayi. But no, credit to him. And Belgium, absolutely brilliant, came back to win. And that goal from front to back in 10 seconds, you know, that's counter-attacking football at its absolute best. It really, really is. That game had everything in it, because Japan could have gone 3-0 up and could have been game over. But, you know, you'll give credit to Belgium, their resilience to come back and actually win the game. Brilliant. And my heart does go out to Japan, because, you know, those players fought absolutely hard and they, you know, the heart was on their sleeves and they just left everything on the pitch. But unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be.
I felt so sorry for Japan. And yeah, and then to see that idiot who wrote an article saying that all Arsenal fans were up in arms because Fellaini scored. When I think someone went and had a look, there was 9 people who tweeted it and no one replied to any of their tweets out of the entire Arsenal fan base on Twitter. But you got, I mean, hell of a game, but you got a feel for Japan. If their goalkeeper, it's like watching 11 David Ospina's out there. If their goalkeeper would have been like 6'4" or something, he would have got that last goal that tripled in. You know, he dived to his right and it went trickling just out of the range of his fingers. So I thought, oh no, I'd love to have seen Japan get through, but Belgium it is. I'll take the next game, Sweden, Switzerland. Brilliant game. I expected Switzerland to go through, especially with the wonderous Arsenal players there of Lichtsteiner and Xhaka and Barami, another player who's interested me during the World Cup, and Shaqiri, who was a bit quiet during that game. But Sweden, a really hard team to play against. They're really organised, really defensive. They let you have the ball for a long time. And then Forsberg, did he curl the ball in from the middle of nowhere? Was that what he did? Was it? I've got vague recollections in my head of going, ah, they've gone and scored.
Was it a deflection?
It was a massive deflection.
Yeah, off of Panji, yeah.
It was a shot from quite a way out, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, just outside the box, wasn't it? And it just deflected top corner.
Because that was one of those games I was watching it, and the sun goes right onto my telly. And as I close my blinds, it sometimes I can't see the screen properly. So I was looking at it going, wow, Sweden have won that. Absolutely brilliant. I think Switzerland are quite unlucky, but it's just brilliant for me being part Swedish as I am. I'm 8% Scandinavian. So they're the team I've adopted. Right. So you three can have a chat about England while I sit there and do nothing. David, you can start them off. I'm saying nothing.
Now, how did you describe last night? It wasn't one of the classic matches of the round, and yet it was eminently watchable for all the wrong reasons, because I'll try not to go overboard, but Colombia's tactics up until the point that England went one up were absolutely awful. They were clearly out there to spoil. They were clearly out there to try and make England lose their discipline. There was all sorts of stuff going on off the ball and lots of play acting. And I thought, well, maybe that's what they feel they have to do. But of course, once they went a goal behind to the most blatant penalty you're ever going to see, then they knew then they had to come out and play a bit after the 3 minutes it took to take the penalty, of course, while they were busy trying to rough up the penalty spot and trying to provoke even more England players. So at that point, when they came out and played, it suddenly became an interesting game. And I think, to be fair, most England supporters would have worried about whether or not we could hold on. And when Pickford made that absolute blinding save, and kind of going into the last minute of added on time, you thought, that's it, we've done it, it's our night. And then, of course, they go and throw away the header from the following corner. And that then meant a half an hour of absolute just England hanging on, in all honesty. We had a couple of chances, I know, but nothing on target. We didn't really trouble David Ospina all night, other than from the penalty spot. But thank goodness we got through. And clearly beforehand, Gareth Southgate had said that England have been working on penalties, and clearly they have been, because although they went one behind, they had Pickford to be grateful to again for a wonderful couple of saves, and they held their nerve and held on. And in the end, it was a relief and a release of joy for England supporters. I accept there's going to be people watching this for whom it was absolutely awful, and I'm sorry, but we're through. Okay.
Don't ask me. You lot are talking about it. I don't care about England.
Well, I asked a question to David then, because there was something that I think we were missing from that game. And that was the case of, I think Dele Alli was still holding on to an injury of some form and was doing a bit of an Alex Iwobi around the 60th minute and getting a bit tired. I think we missed Fabian Delph, because obviously he's off at the moment on paternity leave.
He's come back. He's flown back today, hasn't he?
Yeah, and he wasn't available. And I thought he was the one player that we needed in that midfield, because it's quite an unbalanced group in there where you've got Jesse Lingard and Dele Alli, who were more
The midfield didn't function at all. I agree with you. The midfield didn't function at all. They didn't do against Belgium either, although obviously it was a different three. But no, that's the one worrying area, that we weren't able to create too many chances against Colombia, and Sweden defend better than Colombia. So Saturday, something has to be done. We have to find that creative spark from somewhere if we're to get anything out of that game, I think. You may think differently.
No, I think we certainly need to keep hold of a player like Sterling in the side, because I think his passing and his ingenuity, although he hasn't scored for 1,000 minutes or whatever, 1,000 England games, I don't know what the headline was that Daily Mail put out, something reactionary anyway. But certainly he's one of those players, with Harry Kane not being hugely creative as a forward. It's wonderful for, hold up play. We've seen him do it hundreds of times against us, unfortunately. Whilst he's in an England shirt, we have to begrudgingly cheer him on. But I think for what he's giving that team, then certainly he's a proper out-and-out finisher, but we do lack that creativity from him. And just a left foot on the pitch.
It's hard to get the words out, isn't it? He's a bloody good player. He's a damn good player.
He is. Harry Kane is a finisher. And, I hate to say it, I do, but he's a very good player. Even for Tottenham, you can't take away what he kind of even brings to Tottenham. He's a one chance, one goal sort of player. He's not the sort of player that needs like lots of chances to score. If you give him the ball, you can almost guarantee he's gonna try and get it on target. And you're right, he's not very creative, but you give him the ball and he will score. And that's credit to him. He's worked hard from going out on loan and coming to what he is now. I think sometimes we do go overboard. I don't think he's one of the world's best players, and that's not me with my Arsenal hat on. That's me that being genuine. In life, you have to win things before you can be known as a great player. And apart from two golden boots, he hasn't won anything. So, he's the sort of person, he's a focal point. And with all the creativity that England have got, Sterling is a sort of person, you give him the ball, he will run. Dele Alli, he's quite good at passing. I think that I personally would play Rashford. I really would, because can you imagine Rashford, Alli and Sterling running at you? That will scare any defence. But the problem is that offers you nothing defensive-wise, because Rashford and Sterling are not going to run back. So I think that going forward, I think England are very, very good, but sort of defending wise, I think we're very, very suspect. And like you both alluded to, against a team that knows how to defend, like Sweden, we are going to maybe come unstuck a little bit, and we may need to look at different options. And it may be a chance for someone like Rashford to come on and score, or even someone who's going to work hard, like a Welbeck. And I know probably everyone will be sort of laughing, but Danny Welbeck, what he may lack in striking instinct, nothing can make up for his hard work. And he will run and run and run all game. And if you need someone to protect your fullbacks, then I would definitely put Danny Welbeck in, because he will just run and run for you all day. He will chase down everything, and his work rate is almost second to none.
He's a big game player as well, Daniel Welbeck. I think that's one of the things that is almost forgotten, is the fact that, he was Fergie's main man for some big European ties, a bit like he was doing with Ji-Sung Park before we brought him in. And once we ended up with him in the sides, we found exactly the same thing. He scores big goals and big opportunities. You remember, that first win at Old Trafford in the FA Cup, where he gets the winner against, only after leaving them a couple of months ago. And you also have, the 95th minute winner against Leicester City.
Yes.
In theory, dragged us back towards trying to go for that title only a couple of seasons ago. And I think Danny Welbeck is great to have in this squad. purely for that reason, that he is a big game player, and if you need him to turn up at a big stage, you can put out there and he will be Mr. Reliable from that point of view.
Let's not forget as well that coming into this World Cup, he was the leading goal scorer at international level in our squad. Kane's overtaken him with his goals out here, but he has got a decent scoring record for England. And I agree with you. I would be tempted to start him on the left side, Sterling on the right. I think I'd give Lingard a bit of a rest on Saturday, but then what do I know? That then means you've probably got to play Dier in the middle, because unlike you, Carl, I'm not a fan of Dele Alli. And I thought last night, although he had clearly got a bit of a problem injury-wise, I was praying for them to substitute him when they did, because when it was getting all heated towards the end, he was just a red card waiting to happen. And he always will be. That's the way he plays the game.
Oh, definitely. And I think Gareth Southgate got an issue now, because it's obvious that Dele Alli is not fully fit. Now, do you take the risk and sort of play him against Sweden? Or do you think, okay, Dele Alli's now got to come out and, you, like you said, play someone like Dier? And I think Dier sort of would walk into that midfield. Or, like Josh said, would you play Delph? I personally, I'm not just saying it to my Arsenal hat on, I really would do what you said. I'd play Welbeck on the left, I would play Sterling on the right, and then I would play Kane up front, because that's going to give you the creativity, it's going to give you a little bit of defensive stability, but definitely it will give you, it will push the Sweden fullbacks back so much, because someone like Welbeck and Sterling will get the ball and just run at you, and that's what you kind of need. You need to push them back, because defensively, I think Sweden are okay. I mean, England haven't come up against a tough defensive opposition yet. And they are going to be tested, definitely. Kane is going to be shackled. I think Sweden play with a four at the back, I believe. So that's, you almost guarantee you're going to have two people on Kane. And if you can push their fullbacks back and keep them in the defensive third, then that's almost letting whoever is in the centre mid. So whether it be Lingard or whether it be Dier or releasing Kane, just to sort of make a bit of space and try and score.
Yeah, I'd say with Sweden, from the games I've seen of them play, they do look to be a very well-drilled defensive outlet. I think there was a worry about us changing the system too much as well. We've played every game with this five at the back, with wing-back system. I don't think we should be altering that at this time. Then whether or not we look at playing, say, Danny Welbeck instead of someone like Ashley Young at left wing back, then maybe that's the option we've got there. But otherwise, I think the starting 11, we shouldn't change it too much. And perhaps another player that I didn't think was necessarily worth all of the hype, but certainly should have a look in, would be Ruben Loftus-Cheek instead of Dele Alli. I think he is the main player that, or at least the weak spot in our midfield at the moment, is Alli. And I think Loftus-Cheek, he's got that kind of exuberance that youth gives you to be able to really carve out and find those gaps within a tight back line. And I think he might be that kind of, raw talent that we kind of need to give us that inspiration to get through basically two banks of four, fundamentally, that we will be playing against Sweden.
Yeah, good point that, Josh. And kind of points towards the other change I would make to the England side as well. You mentioned about staying with the back five. Absolutely agree with that. But in goodness name's sake, get Cahill back instead of Walker, because he's an absolute embarrassment as one of the three. I know he doesn't play there at club level very often. In fact, maybe once for Manchester City last season. But he does look the weak link in that side. He's far too casual in possession.
Yeah,
well, I think the problem is his speed makes up for anything. So if he does give the ball away, I think Gareth Southgate even just relies on his speed to recover the ball, because he's quite fast. He's very fast, but at the same time, you're right, he can't pass the ball, and he gives away the ball so much.
It was one of the truisms that Arsene Wenger actually spoke and was correctly quoted on from BN Sports, is where he said that the weakness in this team is Carl Walker, because of the fact that he is playing in a semi role that he's not suited to, or at least hasn't played in. I think whilst City had their defensive problems last season with both their fullbacks being injured for a while, they did have to move to three at the back. And I think Kyle Walker was one of those, if I remember rightly, that probably played about 10 or so games, maybe more from there. I'm sure if there's a City fan in there that's watching right now, that will be able to prompt me on that. But I'm pretty sure he did play fairly often there when they were, you know, trying to mix it up with Fabian Delph coming in at left back as well. But I'm not sure if I'd even change it, because I think the speed they've got on the counter, we're going to need that pace at the back, especially when you've got the other one from RB Leipzig, Emil Forsberg, who scored the goal. With his pace on the counter, making sure we've got that pace to keep up with him. I don't think there's many quicker out there really that we've got in a defensive-minded position. You're only really asking someone like Raheem Sterling, or, you know, it is Kyle Walker or Kieran Trippier to really track that run. Ashley Young is also another option, just to man mark, just do a job on him. But I think we've just got to be careful that we don't take out too much pace out of this side, especially if we're going to try and dominate possession.
Fair enough.
That's fun.
Danny, are we going to ask some questions? Because otherwise we're going to end up doing three quarters of an hour on England.
Well, I think the majority of, quite a lot of the people who listen to the pod are either England fans, or if they're American or North American, then their team aren't in it. And the Australians, I missed all the Australia games. I'm sad about that. But Timmy Cahill played his last ever World Cup. That made me sad. But don't worry, Sweden are going to beat England. It's going to be... Sebastian Larsson, he's going to come back and he's going to score the goal. It's going to be 1-0 Sweden. Right, I think we should move on to your predictions. We'll start with going Josh, David, Carl. So Uruguay, France, that is, I'm actually looking on the UK site now, so I know what time of day it is. It's like Josh said, it's 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon, Uruguay, France. Josh, who do you think is going to win?
I think... I'm going to go with the Desmond and it go into penalties.
Oh,
yeah.
Lovely. Well, it depends which France turns up, doesn't it? Because if you've got the Comics team that could turn up and let in a load of goals, and it's going to be 5-5. But then if you get the France of the second and third group game, where I don't think they were that good. The first game, I think they were pretty good. But yeah, they just all hate their manager, and most of the French people I know that are like French football, I say most of them, it's just one, it's Lana. She says she hates it. So, David, what do you reckon? Who do you think is going to go through? Oh, Josh, did you say he's going to go through on pens, or don't you want to?
I would go with Uruguay through on penalties.
Oh, David.
I think it's going to be an awesome game, provided you've got Cavani and Suarez starting up front for Uruguay, and provided we've got Giroud and Mbappe for France, because I think that's a pairing that works, the little and large one. Yeah. So I can see it, but 2-2 is infinitely possible. I'm going to take France to edge it 3-2.
Like the old Alan Smith, Ian Wright days, or the not-so-favourable Nicholas Bentner and the Arshavin days, because they had one good game together. Carl, what do you reckon?
I think the Feed the League merchants might just scrape it. I think I'm not sure if Cavani is fully fit, because he obviously went off against Portugal and he looked like he had big strapping on his thigh, I want to say. So it depends on how fit he is. Suarez hasn't really turned up for this World Cup, but this may be the spark that he needs. But yeah, I think the Feed the League boys might just scrape it. So I'm going to go for a 2-1 France.
Well, the bookies are favouring France in that game. I think if France turn up, they've got the firepower to do it. And once you see Mbappe ripping it through the midfield at 900 mile an hour, no one's going to touch him. So you'll either bring him down and maybe get a free kick or a penalty. But the number of penalties in this World Cup, I think teams are playing for that as well. So that's going to be, I'll be watching all four of these, but it's going to be a really good game. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm going France as well. With you, Carl, start with you. Brazil, Belgium, is it as... all over, as most people would think, and Brazil going to go through?
No, I'm going to go for Belgium. I really am, because I will say that I don't think even the best Brazil will turn up, and I think Neymar, on his day, Neymar's is world class. You know, there's no doubt about that. But I think if Brazil's back line can be got at. I really do. I think it can be penetrated. And I think if Hazard turns up, and I think if Lukaku turns up, then, and Carrasco, you know, they've got some very good players going forward. And if all the players turn up, I think they could have a go at Brazil, because I don't think any team really have had, like, a really sort of attacked Brazil. And I think once, if a good Belgium side does, then they might go for it. So I'm going for Belgium.
Lovely. David?
Funnily enough, I think I'm tempted to go to Belgium as well, for one simple reason, that Brazil are going to be without Casemiro, who's kind of been the oil in their midfield engine. And I think Belgium don't have anyone missing. I may be wrong, but I don't think they're missing anyone through suspension. And I agree with Carl. I think if Hazard turns up, if De Bruyne turns up, if Lukaku turns up, they are probably going to have too much for that Brazilian defence. And I'd like to think I'm wrong, because I've always had a soft spot for Brazil, but I don't think I am this time.
I think if you play someone like Fellaini there and let him say to him, do a Barami on Neymar, you're going to ruin his game. And then the best player Brazil have got is going to be broken into little pieces. And then Fellaini can use his bones as hair picks. Hair picks? It's not even a thing, is it? Hair comb. Oh, my echo started on hair comb. Who knew? Josh, did you read my question I put in there?
I did.
Oh, lovely. Right, what's your thoughts on the game?
I'm going to say Brazil, and convincing result for Brazil. Brazil have only conceded one goal in this tournament.
And we've seen how big three goals.
We saw Mexico as well, how Mexico absolutely destroyed a German team. Although they didn't actually, you know, convert any of their chances, they were getting in behind constantly with that German defence. And I think what we saw in that 2-0 from them, I think, yeah, it's going to be Brazil are going to completely wipe the floor with this Belgian side. And we'll see Roberto Martinez crying in the corner. I won't say a repeat of 7, you know, it could be a 7-1. I really do think it could get out of hand. I really do think, because Neymar's got the space. He'll be given the space in behind Meunier to attack the lovely fleshy core of Belgium, where they've got Alderweireld probably on his side. And then you've got, you know, probably Roberto Firmino keeping, well, we've seen him in the league being able to keep multiple defenders with his running, occupied. Douglas Costa probably coming back in, because I think Willian is a doubt for them. But yeah, I think the replacement for Casemiro is Fernandinho. That's not necessarily a huge drop down in class. And I think because how disjointed Belgium are with the number of attacking talents they've got, they just seem too top heavy. And I think just a well-organized side will just slowly and methodically just break them down. A bit like, to be honest, the Brazil versus Germany game that we saw in the last World Cup, that 7-1 was a top-heavy Brazilian side going against just a methodical team that just went through the gears and just broke them down and punished them at every opportunity. And I think with the likes of Coutinho's now having a wonderful World Cup as well, I think that's where my money is. It's going to be Brazil, and I think it's going to be a high-scoring game for them.
I agree with you completely. If you do manage to somehow stop Neymar, you've still got Jesus, you've still got Willian if he plays, you've still got Coutinho, who in most teams would be one of their best players. Paulinho's not a shrinking violet either, since he's gone to Barcelona. He's become a really good player. And then you've got other players like Firmino, another one who could... in any other World Cup team, we go, well, he's probably your best player. And then you've got Fernandinho, who was one of the linchpins in one of the best Man City teams to ever win the title. No, in one of the best Premier League teams to ever win the title. Obviously, it's not Fernando, is it? He's nothing to do with Brazil anymore, is he? No, the other one there.
No, it's not that one. Yeah, and also the case of, you know, we saw Japan absolutely rip Belgium apart, and they're not exactly a big nation.
They're vulnerable. They're
footballing, yeah, they are certainly vulnerable.
And we've seen in this World Cup, shockingly, Manuel Neuer, Courtois and De Gea, three allegedly are the best goalkeepers on the planet. They've all been
terrible. He's not, though. Josh, don't start him off.
He's not.
I wouldn't do that, would I? So, but two of us are going for Belgium and two of us are going for Brazil. The next game is, I'll scroll down. Sweden, England. Well, you three say England, I say Sweden. Should we move on from that one?
Yeah.
You want to give any prediction to the score? Carl, I'll start with you. Prediction for the England-Sweden score?
It would be very low, 1-0.
I'm going 1-0 Sweden. David?
2-1 England after extra time.
Ooh, Josh?
1-0 England extra time. I think it's going to be an awful, awful 90 minutes.
Me too.
I think you're right.
It's going to be just a bore draw that you would, you know, it's going to be a bit like Denmark-France, basically.
Well, this is my chance to have a quick say on why about England. You beat two of the worst teams in the World Cup. You lost against a half-decent Belgium team, which I know said we England put their second string out, but Belgium aren't anything special. And then you won one with Colombia, which I didn't overly rate, especially when their James Rodriguez, their best player, wasn't even playing. And then most of the time you're getting goals from penalties and stuff like that. So I don't rate England at all. I think you've just managed to scrape through and then come up against a solidly defensive team. Going to struggle to score a goal and Sweden will just get you on the break.
That's tournament football, though. It doesn't matter how you get through and how well you're playing. You've just got to get through. And I think that's what England have done so far. And
do you not remember in 2004 that Greece won the European Championship by being absolutely shit? Do you remember
they didn't
that?
Score a single goal.
Exactly. So let's face
England aren't quite that bad.
And whisper Denmark.
Oh, yeah. They were on the beach, weren't they, when they were told they were allowed to come and play in the tournament? Johnny Jensen. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, what a player. Anyway, final game, Russia, Croatia. David, while you're there, what's your thoughts on that and prediction?
That's a really interesting one. Croatia on paper, you would say, but Russia, huge home crowd advantage. Must be full of confidence the way they've got through after the way they were slated before the tournament. I think I would probably favour Russia, but it might be another penalty shootout, this one.
Ooh. Josh?
I've been umming and ahhing about this result whilst trying to build my fantasy football team for this round. And I really don't know. I think Croatia will get through. I think it will be something like 2-1. 2-1 to Croatia. It'll be really tight, I think, with Golovin and Juba in there. Up front, they're the main threats for Russia, and you know we've seen what Croatia can do, but it could be an absolute, you know, it's a house waiting to be set on fire, basically.
That's a saying I've never heard before. Yeah. Are you carpentering sayings now?
I'm creating them now. Now that he's just swanned off to Malta, there's a gap in the market, and I'm trying to fill it.
Oh, he's going to sign for Arsenal because if you're filling the gap in the market, it could be ITK.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Who do I think from the French league we're going to sign? Escargot.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. He hasn't got much pace, though.
No.
Not that good. Right, my thought on it is it's going to be a slobber knocker, only because Russia are going to have to come off and be pedded up all the way through the game. And they're going to hope it can go to extra time. They can go and get pedded up even more, be injecting into their eyeballs, because Russia are, they've got one half-decent player and that's it. There is, as Sherlock Holmes would say, something is afoot when it comes to Russia's performance in this World Cup. I don't allegedly. Know. I'm making it up, allegedly. I'm just saying that for shits and giggles. If I wake up dead tomorrow, you know, I'm on the side. If I start itching and going yellow, I'm already bald. So, yeah, but Croatia, they've been probably one of my favourite teams of the tournament so far. I was really impressed with Iran, just the way they did it all, and their goalkeeper, and they were so unlucky. But Croatia, I think they've got everything there, and the Croatian fans are really behind them. And plus, remember when we had Herman Hrvaje, Herman, my mate from Croatia, on, and he predicted 3-0, and we all laughed at him, and he said he was optimistically realistic or some saying like that, and he hashtagged it. And it became a hashtag throughout the entire world because he got it 3-0. So I should ask him. I don't think he's on. No, I should ask him what he thinks is going to be. So, how many questions have we got, Josh?
Getting some more now.
Ooh.
Oh, do I not get a prediction about Russia, Croatia?
No. Oh, what's your prediction for Russia, Croatia?
Fuck off! Don't answer now.
I blame Ennis.
Fuck Ennis. No, but I think Croatia. I think Croatia are the dark horse for the World Cup. I really do. I think the midfield is second to none. I think the midfield is absolutely brilliant, and they've got the best centre midfielder in the world in Modric. I don't want to hear no arguments about that. He is Modric is the best centre midfielder in the world, and I think that they just have maybe just a little bit too much for Russia. You know, the tournament host, and you know. Kind of want them to stay in just for the atmosphere, but I think Croatia just have a little bit too just a bit better than Russia, so yeah, they go through.
Okay, right. Josh, do you want to start doing the questions? You can hand them out.
Yes, I can hand them out. Where shall I start first? I will go to David for this one from Archie Q. England have only scored one goal from open play in the World Cup. Should we be that excited if we're not should breaking we up more? Teams? Yeah, should we shoot?
there's a question, Archie. Thank you for that one. Yeah, we should be concerned going into Saturday, but I think they're going to find a way. They'll find a way in the end of getting through because they just look to have something about that group of players and something about Gareth Southgate's demeanor and his way of producing something with them. I don't care, frankly, if we win 2-1 with two penalties on Saturday. But yeah, it would be nice to see them playing a little bit more flowing football. They actually played very well against Panama, but you know, Panama's Panama. I understand that. Sweden will be different. It will be dull and hard, and I don't expect them to rip Sweden apart. So if you get one goal from open play and one penalty on Saturday, that'll do me. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Let's go with to Carl with this one from some guy called Ellis Mail. He's just asking.
Who the fuck is he?
Yeah, he's just asking, is it coming home?
Well, like I said, I spoke to Chris Carpenter, and Chris Carpenter has guaranteed that he is going to come home because he's very excited about England winning the World Cup. Excited.
He's had the New England tattoo done right across his face.
I mean, do you know what? It'd be nice for England to win the World Cup. Do I honestly think they'll win the World Cup? No, I don't. I honestly don't think they are good enough to win the World Cup. I'm in two minds. I want England to win the World Cup, but at the same time, I don't, because I don't want them to start saying that Harry Kane's the best thing since sliced bread. And you know, the English media will go on and on and on about it because they'll just, you know, have a wank fest over all the Spurs players, and it's just, I just can't deal with that. But at the same time, as a nation, you know, somewhere where I live, somewhere where I was born, do I want them to win the World Cup? Hell yeah, I do. Like, I'm not gonna lie, but I think the positives definitely outweigh the negatives. But I just don't think England have enough about them to win the World Cup, if I'm really honest.
There is one thing that, you know, when you make a bit of a dodgy bet, you back it up with another bet just to keep you happy. If we do win the World Cup and Harry Kane is the top goal scorer, which it looks like he's going to be, goodbye Spurs. That is the only bit that is keeping me sane from this World Cup. And when he bangs in all those penalties, is the fact that he'll be gone. He'll be going off to some other team for 200 million quid. They'll go and spend on a load of players from Serie A with one leg and that are blind, and then they're going to get relegated for financial irregularities. And then we will remember them as a
team. They need to put up their stadium, like Steve alluded to many podcasts ago. Their stadium costs are going up and up and up, so they might need to start to get rid of some of their star players.
And they said their stadium's going to be bigger than ours. So what do we do, David, with our stadium this summer?
Now, listen, the whole thing with Kane now has been brought into context today by the news coming out of Real Madrid, or news. It's just transfer speculation. Ronaldo may be on his way to Juve for, is it, 88 million? Yeah. Now, is that to fund a purchase? And that you would think that Kane would be top of their list.
Real Madrid always buy generally the golden boot from the World Cup. That's how their kind of model works. Is you've got the Galactico kind of model is buy, you know, the star player from the World Cup, and the names that they're getting banded around with at the moment, they've had to deny. They've tried to bid for Neymar, and they're bidding for Mbappe as well. I think, yeah, there'll be a holy. Well, no, they said good players at the World Cup. Lewandowski was god awful. but yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting one. That one. So talking about big players in the World Cup as well. We've got a question from Peter Coulson, and I think the Walrus and the Hedgehog has asked the same question as well. Which player from the World Cup that you've seen would you has really impressed you and you'd like Arsenal to go out and sign? And I think we'll ask that to everybody. So start with you, Danny.
Oh, wow. I need time to think about that. Shame Lucas Podolski isn't playing, because I'd love to see him back at Arsenal. Rocking it in the J League at the moment. I'm going to say that Terraria bloke, it's realistic. He's been sold. The chairman said he's gone for 30 million. I just hope it's us that are signing, because I've been massively impressed by him. He's been absolutely brilliant. So there you go. A logical answer. I'm never doing that again. Sorry.
David, next to you.
Well, there's only one fella for me, and it's not a logical. It's never going to happen now. It's too late, but it's got to be Mbappe. The guy's going to be the next big thing.
And he's what, 19?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Fantastic player.
Absolutely. Carl?
Mine's too. Mina from Colombia. I know he had some shit housing yesterday, but I think he's a very good player. I really, really do.
And I think he could.
Yeah, and I think he could walk into this Arsenal squad. I really do. I know he's at Barcelona, isn't he?
They're trying to get rid of him very, very quickly because he cannot pass a ball left, right, or centre. That's his biggest problem. He won't fit
in. Isn't there talk of Everton getting him?
Yeah.
Apparently, but I think he's a very good defender. I really do. And also Carrasco, I know he plays for Atletico, but I think...
Oh, no, he doesn't anymore. He's in China. He's gone to China.
I think. Oh,
yeah,
I
he went to China in January.
I thought he's a very good player. I think the games that I've seen him today, the games that I've seen him in the tournament, I think he's absolutely brilliant. I mean, I've still got a man crush on Draxler. I really do. And I'd walk over hot coals for Draxler to come to Arsenal, but he didn't have a very good World Cup, not at all. But I think Carrasco could do a job at Arsenal 100%, but he's probably getting like 200 million pounds a day in China, so there's no hope of him coming over to us.
Who would you have, Josh, because we've only got 5 minutes to go?
Oh, I'd go really hipster. I would go to the Uruguay midfield, but I'd take Nandez. He's really, really impressed me. He's a young player from...
Nandez.
Yeah. He's he plays with Boca Juniors. They're kind of like box-to-box midfielder. That's who I'd go for. I've also been impressed by Barrios at Colombia as well. Basically, I think I just want South American players at Arsenal. if we've got 5 minutes left, we'll go... Quick final question from Jovi82. So thanks to everybody who's asked questions as well. We've got some really good ones, but unfortunately, I haven't got enough time. And it's going to be best goal so far this World Cup that we've seen. Does anyone have one immediately at the top of their head?
Pavon.
Yes. Oh,
yeah. That was an absolute screamer.
And when they had the camera showing it from behind, it looked even better when it was from behind.
Yeah. You see how far it started outside the post and curled in.
It was almost Le Tournoi style, wasn't it? Mm. When then Roberto Carlos got that one in Le Tournoi.
Mm.
Modric against Argentina was a very good shot, right in the corner from outside the box. Absolutely class it was. Even the Japanese one from the other day against Belgium, the second one was very good.
Yes, yeah, true.
I like Di Maria's one as well. I thought that was perfectly placed. I mean, that was almost a perfect goal, slotting in the top corner, if I remember that rightly. You know what my memory are? That was only 4 days ago, so I'm lucky I remember it was him. But yeah, that was another stunning goal. Josh, you got one?
I would go for Ronaldo's free kick. I just think the whole event, the pantomime around it as well, it just made that a wonderful goal. Just absolutely incredible, and really just, you know, made both teams kind of arrive at the World Cup, and you just thought, right, Ronaldo's here. What's Messi going to do? Because he's going to play, I think it was the day after. And I think that was just a huge announcement to the World Cup that he was here and he was ready to party. And for me, just the whole thing around it, which is
one of my favourite ones. I'm going to say the goal, if South Korea v Germany, when Manuel Neuer was playing left wing and then and then Son went, okay, I'm actually not offside if I'm in my own half. Right, off we go. I would have been so tempted to have just done a, what was it, Tim Sherwood, just stood on the ball, did a Tim Sherwood like that and then backheeled it in. That would have been brilliant. But that's the goal that made me laugh the most. That was absolutely brilliant. Poor old Germany. When no one here has mentioned the O word for the entire show, Jason will be very happy with us.
And talking of Jason, it would be remiss of me not to mention that there are 66 people watching at the moment and we've only got 26 thumbs up. So
it's a sign, David.
Thumbs up, for Christ's sake. Thank you.
What's the world coming to?
It's 66 watching. It's a sign. It's coming home.
If we can get to a million thumbs up before the hour, then I will guarantee England will win the World Cup. So go and give it a little gentle tickling, a little fondling of that thumbs up button. And if you want, even hit the bell button if you want to be ding-donged every time we're on. That doesn't sound very interesting, does it? Right, so we have been gone. We started at exactly 7:30, like we were meant to, and we're finishing at almost exactly 8:30. So,
did you notice who's not on and how good we are at timekeeping? Not naming any names, but you know.
And I sound checked you all before we started. That's a crazy idea. There's Jason at home winding up this side, the handle on the side of his PC, trying to get it to work. Bless him. He's got one big muscle. Right. Thank you very much to you, Carl, for joining us this afternoon. It's been good.
At any time. It's been absolutely brilliant.
And also to you, David, with your wise words.
And my Bira Moretti, if anybody happens to be working, sorry, Bira Moretti, if anyone's looking in from there, this is what we call product placement, and I've got an empty fridge. Thank you very much.
So if you, if anyone from that company wants to message us, a birdcatwonderland@gmail.com, and you want to refill David's fridge, you can sponsor us for as many shows as you want. Finally, Josh, thank you very much for joining us again. That's two shows in a week for you. You've gone full carpenter.
I'm sorry. So as I said, I've seen the gap in the market and I'm looking to fill it.
Are you looking forward to the Tour de France on Sunday?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not really sure, to be honest. I'm enjoying the World Cup too much, to be honest, to deal with another sport with a cloud of doping around it.
as Chris Froome wins the Tour de France, we're wheeling the entire thing. And finally, thank you very much to all you wonderful listeners in there. We've got the usual people like Loki, Travis, Archie, Mike, who is said they can call him Mike, Peter Coulson, the Germans laugh at the English. That's very good. Lovely. What else is there?
Not this World Cup, they're not.
No, we are laughing at you. Next doesn't seem that I've said Loki, haven't I? Oh, Thomas from Norway, he was there as well. And Mickey McDrass? I haven't got my glasses, I can't see. Majib is there, and Safi One is there. And who else? There we go. Parth Sane. I don't know if he's any relation to the wonderful Sane. So thank you very much for everybody for listening. We shall be back. There is a 2-day break after the quarterfinals. We will be back for one of those 2 days, and we'll be back after every round of the World Cup during the 2-day break. So we're not sure what time it is. It would usually be about this time, but we're not sure which one of those 2 days it is, because people have busy lives sitting in beer gardens getting drunk. So this has been a Birdcat Wonderland, a World Cup special. Gentlemen, is it coming home?
Yes.
It most certainly is.
Would you like to sing It's Coming Home?
Depends where you live, really, doesn't it?
We'll probably get demonetized, right, for having copyright infringements.
For having fun.
Yeah.
Bloody buggers. Right.
If you'd heard me sing, you'd know why we don't.
A few more bottles and you would be singing.
Brilliant. Thank you, everybody.
Good night.
See you later, guys.